Right. So thank you all for joining us this morning on the last day of APHA. It's been a fantastic conference. And I'm Emma Gilchrist. I'm from University of Colorado, the Department of Family Medicine. And today I'm going to tell you about a project we conducted. And we identified the key capacity and competencies of practices and payers to integrate behavioral health and primary care. I have no disclosures. So some background before we get started on the project. Nearly half of all adults will experience mental health illness or substance abuse at some point in their lifetime, and 67% of those will not get the behavioral health treatment they need. And most will turn to primary care, and 66 of primary care providers reported not being able to access outpatient behavioral health services for their patient. Additionally, behavioral health providers and treatment can care for many of the top conditions that are driving overall healthcare costs. So almost 20 years ago, in 1996, the IOM reported, mental health and primary care are inseparable. Any attempts to separate the two leads to inferior care. So we have a great evidence base for why we need to provide whole person care, yet there's still some struggles with that. So one solution to bringing... So one solution to bringing services together is integrating behavioral health and primary care. So the definition that we use for this project and a lot of our work is from CJ Peak and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And it's the care that results from a practice team of primary care and behavioral health clinicians working together with patients and families using a systematic and cost-effective approach to provide patient-centered care for a defined population. This care may address mental health, substance abuse conditions, behavioral health, life stressors and crises, stress-related physical symptoms, and ineffective patterns of care. Integrating behavioral health and primary care is good health policy and is good for health. And when we talk about behavioral health services, we're really talking about a range of services. And it's a little blurry, but we show a continuum of the need to address the psychosocial barriers to care, to mental health and substance use, and all the way up to caring for the severely mentally ill population. And behavioral health providers are usually master's or doctoral level trained, psychologists, social workers, licensed professional counselors, marriage and family therapists. And we also know that there's a few ways we can get to truly integrating care. So for some practices, coordinating care is a great place to start, where they begin to work with behavioral health agencies in their community to bridge services for their patients. And then movement towards co-locating care to bring the providers into the same setting, although they might not be practicing side by side. And finally, to integrated care, where behavioral health and primary care teams work together as one care team on a unified health care plan for patients. So the aim of this project was to identify the key professional practices and competencies among exemplary integrated primary care organizations, with the aim of helping other sites across the country achieve the goal of integrating care more efficiently. We are funded through the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and the Academy Integrating Behavioral Health and Primary Care. And so we started out with that funding, and then as we were doing this work, we got interest from two state-based foundations, one in California and one in Maine. And so we ended up tacking on a few sites for their regions. So our project plan was that we convened a panel of experts in integrated behavioral health and primary care and utilized their expertise to carry out the project and our deliverables. We conducted a literature review to see what existing evidence there was on best practices. And we identified exemplar primary care organizations who were integrating services and visited them and conducted key informant interviews. So my presentation is going to focus on our observations and key informant interviews. We identified 8 practices in the country with help from our expert panel. We conducted a telephone interview and had a criteria checklist, and then we met monthly with our expert panel to review the practices we had talked to for a final selection. We visited each practice for 3 days and conducted on-site observations as well as key informant interviews with members of the staff and providers. And we transcribed all of our interviews and wrote field notes after each visit and analyzed using a grounded theory approach. This project was a partnership with University of Colorado Denver and Oregon Health and Sciences University, and we had IRB approval at both sites. So this is a map that shows the location of the sites we visited. We wanted them to be a variety of practices, private FQHCs with a mix of patients and geographic locations. All right, so our findings. So before I jump into our findings, I just want to share a few definitions. So we originally set out just looking at competencies, but then we realized what we were observing were really patterns of practice. And so that's where professional practices come from. So professional practices are what people do together while they're working. And it refers to identifiable patterns of behavior that people do together when they're working together. And we focused on the behaviors to accomplish integrated behavioral health. And while doing this, we observed a lot that just contributed to good primary care. And so a lot of what I'll share is applicable to providing comprehensive primary care, maybe just not specific to integrated behavioral health services. And then competencies are what it takes to do these practices well. And so this is the knowledge, skills, and attitudes of the providers and staff. And then finally, in order for practice members to be successful at these competencies and professional practices, they need to have the organizational capacity that supports them and makes this feasible. So from this work, we developed a guidebook of professional practices for integrated behavioral health and primary care, and we identified 8 main areas and categorized those as organizational and interpersonal and individual. And so today I'm going to talk through and just give a few highlights of each and provide a quote from our key informant interviews. So the first was the need for a shared mission and vision. And so this really was that the practice's mission was to serve their patients by providing population-based care in an integrated care model, and clinic members at all levels were able to really clearly articulate the goals and visions of the practice. As the CEO said, it's all about mission. I think that's the driving force here. People believe in our mission of outreach to populations that don't have other opportunities for care, and that is the driving force. These organizations also served as learning organizations where there was a culture where it was okay to test new things. And at one practice, we kept hearing the phrase, you know, fail fast. And so they wanted to learn from what they were doing, get constant feedback, and continue to move forward. Finally, leadership and practice members recognized the importance of advocacy, and they shared their model and vision for integrated care with others and advocated for change at the state and community level. And then finally, the practice was able to finance integrated care. In our current fee-for-system environment, this is often a huge barrier to practices. And so the practices that we identified often have close relationships with payers and other funders to adjust contracts and really promote to them the value of integrated care and the return on investment, making a business case for this model. So next was the need to build a sustainable staffing structure. And so expertise within the practice needed to be there to fulfill the mission and vision of providing integrated care. That typically meant having a robust primary care team of mid-level and physicians, as well as behavioral health clinicians to support, and trained nurses, MAs, and have the whole team have buy-in for integrated care. Also need to have adequate access to the behavioral health providers and specialty consultation. And as a director of integration said, we want to have the behavioral health consultants to have at least half of their time unscheduled, because that's when they need to be available for those critical activities of day-to-day consultation, the curbside consultation. They're pulled in frequently to joint meetings with primary care providers. They get warm handoffs throughout the day and do schedule scrubs. All of these things come up to fill their schedules. It's critically important that they're available for that. So we saw some practices who are early on their integration efforts who they hire a behavioral health provider, and then within months, their behavioral health provider schedules are just filled with more traditional mental health appointments, and that prevents the warm handoffs from the primary care providers and the integrated workflow from happening. In addition, these practices were really committed to training and development, and so they had robust onboarding training for new providers and staff, as well as continuing education. So next it was organizational structure, and within this we found that practices really needed to have defined roles and responsibilities. There needed to be this culture of respect for each other's expertise and understanding of what each practice member can bring to the team, as well as developed and documented workflow and protocols. So Behavioral Health Provider told us, we don't just do mental health. We also do tobacco cessation, motivation for weight loss, non-adherence to medicine, medical conditions, and that sort of thing. When one of those needs is identified, either the doctor will call me or they'll come knock on my door, and the nurse will, whatever team member is available. Sometimes the patients will make it all the way to the checkout, and the doctor will have written on the router form that comes with them, needs to see behavioral health provider. And the clerk at checkout will always call me and make sure, did you see this patient? Just in case it did not get to me already. So it sort of comes any number of ways. And generally, as long as I'm available and not with another patient, I'll go and grab the patient, get a warm handoff from provider or the nurse. So we usually saw this in forms of the behavioral health providers doing some lunch and learns with the staff to really share their breadth of expertise and knowledge, and then documented protocols to indicate for all members of the care team when they can access each other for expertise. So in these practices, there was also a clear maximization of physical workspace. So a few of the practices had designed their buildings to accommodate integrated care delivery, but many were having to adjust in their already existing buildings. And so this looked like shared workspace where all members of the care team were working side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Often they didn't have their own offices, but rather a pod where they would come back to do notes and it's easy to share information, overhear conversations, and provide consultations. Also, exam rooms were intentionally designed to be able to be used for physical examinations as well as when they did bring a behavioral health provider in. And so just making slight tweaks to the design where a behavioral health provider can sit across from the patient and not just be looking at their computer screen for documentation, but having a more of a conversation. Finally, there was a telemedicine support, and so many of the practices we visited were equipped with the technology to do telemedicine to rural areas or bring in specialty consultations. And integrating services under one roof. And so that means some spaces rented out space to the public health department and other community resources. And so when the patient came to get their primary care, it was really a one-stop shop. They were getting their behavioral health needs met as well as community resources met. And so in regards to sharing physical workspace, the physician told us just co-locating helps a lot because you overhear conversations. You overhear a name and you think, oh, her brother, I needed to. So that helps with visit planning and with avoiding unnecessary visit. That functions. It looks chaotic, but I wouldn't give it up for anything. A nice lighted office with a window would take your productivity way down. So what we saw was just this constant buzz in the office of people interacting and just flowing with each other and providing, you know, really optimal care for their patients. So finally, at the practice level, it was health information technology. And so the practices really need to have a shared electronic health record that all members of the care team could access and they could see each other's notes. And so a piece of this was in training that behavioral health providers learned how to document in more of the medical fashion. And so instead of providing comprehensive backgrounds on patients, they would provide short, brief notes of problem and solution. And the health information technology also had to have supportive functions and customized templates and data reporting to fit the needs of collecting new behavioral health data. I have a wealth of information sources available to me before I walk in to see that patient. I have a referral from a PCP that's going to identify a target, sleep, depression, diabetes. I have a primary care record, and then I have the consultation with the PCP. So I have three sources of information before I walk into the room. Sometimes I have screening instruments like the PHQ-9, so my job is to go and meet the patient and not to rehash the stuff I already have. It's to fill in the blanks. So often patients are asked to fill out a form here, a form there, and then verbally report back to providers. And so these the shared access integrated EMRs really prevent that from happening, and all providers can view information before meeting with the patient. So now we're going to talk about a few of the interpersonal and individual practices needed to deliver integrated care. So we found a group of practices that fell under the structure and timing of delivery care. And so this was integrated care workflows that allowed for practices to work together, and this often meant having time reserved in the morning to huddle or scrub charts together, identify where you think you might need to pull the behavioral health provider in, documentation and information sharing in their EMRs, supervision. So this was a piece that in a lot of the practices we observed that administration and supervisors still carried a small clinical load, and they still felt really connected to what's happening on the ground and could guide the vision from that perspective. And finally, interprofessional collaboration was just absolutely key. So regarding the timing, if folks come in and try to establish a specialty mental health clinic within primary care and they're doing traditional model of 60-minute appointments and things like that, then you begin to see a system breakdown. Because if you set up a specialty mental health clinic within primary care, quickly people's schedules get filled up and they're no longer available for those 5-minute consultations in the hallway with primary care physicians. Then they're seen as less relevant because they're not available for those brief interventions. So practices that are new to integrating services, one of the ways to kind of build demand among your team is to really be accessible, and primary care quickly begins utilizing if they see you, as opposed to if you're spent in your office the entire day doing some long-term care. So next we identified a large group of professional practices related to communication. This was related to communication among staff and providers and with patients and families. And so a piece of that was writing concise notes, and so that all members of the care team could communicate through the EMR. And it resulted in communication for general care coordination as well as during collaborations and consultations. Also communicating with patients via multiple modes, including the phone, secure email, and using patient portals, and that often, the aim of that was to reduce unnecessary visits into the primary care practice. Using communication that is culturally appropriate, and communicating with friends and family members when they are brought into appointments. So as we're learning how to integrate, we had to understand what the patients meant by depression or mental health disorder. Because if you make the mistake of not saying what they know it to be, then you're not communicating at all. If you come in and say, "So, how's your depression today?" and the patient's told you that nervous for them means they're depressed, and they come in and you say, "How are your nerves today?" then they understand. They don't know what depression is. You have to understand what it is, how they name it, and how they understand it when you're interacting with them. And be consistent in how you're doing it. Because if I go and say, "How's your depression?" they think I'm giving them another disease. And so this really demonstrates the need to be culturally competent in your practice and communication with your patients. So the last group was clinical practices needed to provide comprehensive integrated primary care. And so this included engaging individual couples and families in care, group visits, and then a set of competencies for behavioral health providers. So really a big role of behavioral health providers was clarifying the roles of all the care team members for the patient. Most patients are not used to receiving care from multiple care team and just go to the doctors to see their doctors. And so introducing themselves as a member of the care team and providing the service and letting them know the service that they can provide. Providing evidence-based care using brief assessment and treatment, agenda setting at the beginning of appointments, and connecting patients to other resources in the communities. So a vice president of one of the organizations we visited said, "Behavioral health providers have to have certain assessment skills. They have to be strong diagnostically to really pick up on the symptoms and to take on a different role in treatment. You can't be rigid in what your plan is. You have to be able to bring everyone else's plan into your plan." And so they're really functioning as a member of the care team and incorporating the physician's recommendations for the care plans as well as their own all into one unified care plan. So from this work, we compiled a very lengthy guidebook of professional practices, and we started sharing it, and we began to get phone calls from a few of our payer friends saying, "What am I supposed to do with this? This is over 100 pages. I'm just looking to expand my provider networks. How do I identify high-functioning integrated primary care practices?" So we went back through our book, and we decided to choose a few to help them narrow their focus, and we really looked at what would be measurable or identifiable, as well as what was a little bit more specific to integrated care delivery and the competencies needed. And so with that, we kind of narrowed our list to defined roles and responsibilities, sharing physical space, a shared electronic health record, documented workflow and processes, and that the practices were engaged in quality improvement efforts and using their own data. So in summary, integrated care is really essential to achieving the triple aim of lowering costs, enhancing the patient experience, improving outcomes, and really the quadruple aim of provider satisfaction as well. And integrated care does increase provider satisfaction. We hear a lot about how it's just so nice when they have a patient in crisis to be able to pull someone in and share that. And so our guidebook can be used by practices and providers as a guide to achieving a high level of integrated care, as well as payers and policymakers to identify benchmarks for assessing those practices. And so I'd like to just highlight two resources. One is our guidebook, and then the second is in September we just published a supplement in the Journal of American Board of Family Medicine looking at the work of this project and another one in Colorado, Advancing Care Together. And both provide really practical information on integrating services. So I'd just like to say thank you to my collaborators, the funders, and of course the practices for allowing us to come in and observe them and speak with them for quite a bit of time over the 3 days. Thank you.